Welcome to the Game AFL Podcast, a weekly hit of the best football analysis from the West Australian and the Sunday Times, where the footy never stops. This is the game.
Well, hello, listeners. It's Wednesday afternoon, and that means one thing. It is time for the midweek wash-up. I'm Mark Duffield. I am the senior football writer of the West Australian newspaper. Sitting across from me, Glenn Quatermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times. Quarters.
Duff.
Big lead-in to a big round of footy.
Massive round of footy, and Sunday final game, Eagles, Adelaide, farewell to Subiaco from an AFL point of view.
Yep.
They'll know the landscape, they'll know exactly what's in front of them.
Yes, and I suspect it may be too big a hill for them to climb. They need Melbourne to lose, and they need Melbourne to lose comfortably. That's their in.
Yeah, I think it's only about three goals, and they have to win by about three goals, if my maths are correct.
It's about a 40-point differential, yeah. So if Melbourne loses by 20, West Coast would have to win by 20. That's about the landscape that sits in front of them.
And then the unlikely event that Essendon loses to Freo in Melbourne. Of course, that's a door that could open, but we doubt it.
Yes, that door would have to turn 180 degrees from the events of Subiaco.
The last 2 weeks, exactly.
Last 2 weeks. So who makes it?
Well, I think the eight is set as is. I think Melbourne wins, Essendon wins. I guess for me, the big question will be GWS Geelong playing for a game at...
For a home final,
that's
basically.
Right, playing for a home final, which is fascinating in itself. So for me, that's I think Adelaide will play Richmond round one. So Richmond will travel, and I think it'll be GWS v Geelong, whichever... I'm picking GWS, by the way. I haven't got to the tips yet, but I think it'll be in Sydney.
Yeah, well, GWS's form, look, you know what the problem with this year is that the absence of a great team, and I've said this before, and they tend to fill you full of hope, teams in the competition this year, and then they tend to let you down every now and again. And I think we've seen that pretty much across the board with all teams except for Sydney post round seven.
Mm.
So since round seven, Sydney have been incredibly reliable. That's why many people regard them as their pick for premiers, even though they're not in the top four as we speak. But all the rest have some question marks on them, don't they?
The problem I have with Sydney, I still love them, but and they're probably the form team, but a bit they've expended so much energy in getting there. And sometimes I think it happened to my beloved Hawthorn in 2011. Just expended so much energy in getting there and just couldn't quite get there at the end. That could happen to Sydney, I think.
Yeah, that's possible, but probably the week between round 23 and the finals helps them in that regard.
Yep.
And at this time of year, you don't want more than 1 week between games anyway.
So if here's a hypothetical, if someone comes from outside the four and wins it, have the AFL got a problem on their hands then about perhaps not rewarding the top four enough?
The clubs will tell them they've got a problem. Yep. I think it's a load of rubbish. And I keep coming back to Fremantle in 2013 when they rested pretty much their entire team out of round 23 because they were worried about the travel burden. Remember, they had to go to Etihad Stadium to play St Kilda in that game, and it very nearly blew up in their face because Geelong came within a kick of being beaten by by Brisbane at Cardinia Park, or Simmons Stadium as it is now. And it might have cost Fremantle a home final, but it didn't. And then they went to Geelong, beat them first week of the final. So their players had basically the same football schedule as, say, the top four teams who won in the first week of the finals last year had. Fremantle came out in the preliminary final against Sydney and played the best half of football, I think, in the club's history. So I think provided you manage the break well, the less football is a plus, but I don't think the teams last year managed the break well. And if you look at the two teams involved, we had Geelong who fell over the line against Hawthorn in the qualifying final and then got blown off the park in the first quarter against Sydney in the preliminary final. I'm still not convinced Geelong are that good.
No, neither am I.
And I wasn't convinced they were that good last year. And the other team was GWS, who were in their first final series, and there was probably some inexperience there. So let's look at a sample size over 5 years and then make a decision.
And I think as time unfolds, they'll get better at managing the break. They'll get a lot better at it. It's a very new thing. So as time unfolds, let's see what happens there. What about Mark Williams' kooky idea? We know he's kooky. He was kooky in his the greatest moment in Port's history. He did the mimic being choked with his tie and bagged the club's
president.
Majors. Yeah.
Yep.
But we know he's kooky, but his suggestion that they play all round 23 games simultaneously, so there's no, you know, there's no percentage. You don't know what's happening, so you're not trying to manufacture a result, I guess. But I hate the idea. I don't think it will ever happen anyway. Seven and Fox Footy might have something to say about it.
I was going
to
say, I love the idea, but I think there's a small thing called TV rights deals, which are now running into the billions of dollars, which will preclude that from happening.
I don't love the idea, though. I like the theatre of this weekend, for example. Just say there is a scenario that the Eagles win and they're in the finals. There's the theatre of that. It's the very last game. Surely people from all over Australia will be tuning in to watch that.
So Mark Williams, very interesting character.
Yep.
One of the great coaches,
yep.
One of the great personalities of his time. Mark Williams doesn't drink, you know.
Oh, no, he doesn't.
He drinks red cordial.
They gave him
alcohol one night.
Yeah.
And they had to get him down from off the top of a flagpole at the end of the night. They decided giving Mark Williams alcohol was not a good idea from that point on.
And what was his thoughts about it?
I've never asked him about it, but others who were there say that it was more frightening than amusing. So,
well, there you go. Too much red cordial, perhaps, though.
Okay, who do you like for the flag?
I'm going to go with the Giants. I still think if it clicks, they'll be very hard to beat. I think Adelaide, Giants, Sydney are the three who can win it. I'm going to go with the Giants.
Okay.
I just think there's too much. I think it seems to be coming together. Yes, they're a bit leery. They're still a bit haphazard inside, going inside 50, but there's talent everywhere. And if they get it right, look out.
Yeah, you know what? They dented my faith in them a little bit, watching them play West Coast last weekend. Yep. And I know they won, and I know they kicked clear, and I know that Josh Kelly was outstanding, and I know they had a few players that were down that you would expect to be better in a big game. I just don't like the way they lair eyes and take the mickey out of other teams at important stages in big games, and I think it'll hurt them. And it nearly hurt them against West Coast, and I think it'll hurt them in a big game. And I thought that the pain of losing a preliminary final last year would have gotten rid of most of that stuff, and it's still there. And it must be really hard for Leon Cameron, I reckon, because on the one hand, he has this incredibly talented, incredibly skilled group of players, and he wants them to express themselves because otherwise you're not making the most of their talent. But then you're trying to keep them below that line where they're taking the mickey.
That's just experience, though, and it is still a short lifespan they've had, the Giants.
You can say it's experience, but Steve Johnson still does it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But that is Stevie J, and we make excuses for very few, but we do make excuses for him.
Yeah, because he's a very specific personality. Yeah. But they've got a few that do it. They take unnecessary risks,
yep.
You know, like high reward, high risk things. I don't mind a team like that taking because they have the talent to pull them off. But low reward, high risk should be a no-no, and there's still too much of that going on.
And you get the feeling that they get there on the final day and they do lose by a narrow margin, it's going to be a whopper. It's going to be something that a player will be remembered for. I'll tell you what I do like about Adelaide is we've always spoken about their perhaps lack of depth in the midfield, but they're still solid in that midfield. Very, very talented at either end.
Mm.
What I like about Adelaide is their ability to come back from a major deficit, and that to me is the sign of a premiership side. I don't think there's too many in the eight that I'd trust to come back from 40, 50 points down, but I would believe that they could do it, which gives me faith that they could pull it off. They're my sentimental favourite, by the way, because of the pain that club has been through in the last three or four years, two or three years, you know, with Phil Walsh's departure from this earth. I couldn't begrudge them a win. I think it would be great for their fans and great for the club and great for the memory of Phil Walsh.
Yeah, I wouldn't begrudge Adelaide a flag for sure. And I also think the other thing about it is that they've been the best team all year, haven't they? So you like to see the
yep.
team that dominates the home and away round actually get some reward for it. The other thing about Adelaide is that when you know how teams like always predict doom and gloom if they lose a top-end player, if a top-end player decides to leave the club?
Yep.
Look at what Adelaide have been able to do, despite losing Nathan Bock to the Gold Coast, Phil Davis to GWS, Patrick Dangerfield to Geelong. I think there's been a couple of others walk out the door as well.
And the speculation this year about the three
yep.
leaving, so there's been that as well.
So obviously people don't like living in Adelaide quarters. How could that be?
Well, brown water.
What are your personal experiences of Adelaide?
The one thing I like about Adelaide, I don't like the brown water. I reckon it's a good place to go for a week. Sorry for those of you who come from what they call the Athens of the South, but look, I'm a Melbourne boy, and we always spend a fair bit of time in Adelaide. Great place to be for a week. Don't like the brown water. I do like the carts that go around while you're playing pool in the pubs with the cheese and sausages on them. I think that's a great innovation. There should be more of it.
Clearly, I've been in different pubs to you in Adelaide, but I love Adelaide. I've been there a lot in September covering football finals, and I think it's a great town.
Great wineries, great golf courses too.
Great golf courses. One in particular that made a mess of me, the one with the train tracks running through the middle of it.
Right.
So some questions. Daniel Dowell, obviously an Eagles supporter, wonders whether maybe Josh Kelly to the Eagles. What do you think?
Well, they can have a crack, but I think he's going to ultimately will end up in Melbourne, but perhaps his short-term future may still be in Sydney.
What we're understanding is that the latest mail is that Josh Kelly will sign with GWS for another 2 years. One of the reasons we think that, a reasonably strong on that, is that Paul Connors, his manager, is a great believer in players doing 6 years of service to their first club before they decide to shift anywhere. He believes that a club spends a couple of years developing a player. They deserve to get 3 or 4 years of really good service out of that player
He believes in?
What's that?
Premierships.
So, Paul Connors, yes.
Well, so he believes players should play in premierships if given the opportunity. So my belief is that if he stays at the Giants, he'll get one premiership at least, maybe two. Yep. He'll get at least one. And then he's young enough for his currency to, if not go up, at least stabilise. And he could have a Brownlow and a Norm Smith in the time between as well. So I reckon 2 years to stay at the Giants and then look at your options. And look, as much as the Eagles should definitely have a crack, but I think his destiny is in Melbourne ultimately.
I think so. That's where his family is now. Of course, everyone associates him with East Perth because of Phil Kelly,
yep,
the dual Sandover medalist. But Phil Kelly has been in Victoria for some time. Josh grew up in Victoria, calls Victoria home. So
we'd love to see him over here, though. Love to watch him every second week, that's for sure.
Well, there's two words that sum Josh Kelly up, quarters. Rolls Royce.
Absolutely.
He is a ripper.
He is.
Steve Reid, will the Freo rebuild result in a finals winning team within 2 or 3 years? If not, why has Ross Lyon still got a job?
Well, you can't really answer that question before 2 or 3 years are up. So I'm not sure. But look, I think the recent history has proven you can turn things around pretty quickly. I think maybe three, possibly not two. But maybe three. But look, I might be proven wrong. Sides have turned it around pretty quickly in recent times. So, yes, he can turn it around in that time, is my answer.
Steve, I would say I would bet against Fremantle making the eight next year. Yep. I think a good year for Fremantle next year would be if they won 10 or 11 games, that would be fantastic. But what I really want to see from Fremantle next year is that they eliminate most of the floggings. Maybe one or two floggings next year, but not four, five or six.
So the last 2 weeks, 104-point back-to-back losses. If they can become 60-point losses, I think we can forgive the club for that, given yep. where they're at. I just think the 100-point losses are really hard to fathom. And you know what? And supporters have got a right to be angry after 100-point losses. So.
Well, supporters always get angry after 100-point losses. It is a product. Most times, every now and again, there's an anomaly where your coach has lost the players or you've found yourself with a coach that can't coach. Those things can create anomalies. But generally speaking, your results are a reflection of the team you put on the park.
Yep.
And the teams that Fremantle have put on the park in the last couple of weeks, not great teams, very young teams and very young defences in particular.
Could you pose the question, I guess the devil's advocate would ask, where were they 3-4 weeks ago? Generally the same teams were out there and they were very competitive against pretty good sides.
Yeah, but what I would also say, Quarters, is that, and I said this to a supporter who I had an email conversation with, after round two, Ross was a dud and behind the times and playing too many old players. And after round nine, he was a genius because he'd won 6 out of 7 and now he's a dud again. So when you step back and analyse that, it doesn't make a lot of sense, does it?
No.
It's a product of the teams you put on the park and the philosophies you pursue. Provided Fremantle stick to the plan and provided they continue to recruit players who can play, and then the big if with Ross is, can Ross develop those players? Because this is the one thing he hasn't done from this age before.
Yep.
He's taken over player groups and refined their roles before. And he would argue that's developing players, but he has to develop a group of players from scratch here, and that's going to be the big test.
Yeah,
for
not wanting to go back to Hawthorn all the time, Duff, but pre-success under Clarko, first couple of years, Hawthorn was copying some absolute pantsings.
No doubt.
100-point, 90-point, 80-point, not uncommon.
Yep.
And he stood the test of time. He refused to alter his game plan, and look where he ended up by sticking fat with it, with his beliefs and with the players. So sometimes you just got to batten down those hatches and cop it sweet and have a look at the little moments of daylight that you do get, which there have been a few this year. I think 8 wins has been a good effort. So you wouldn't want to see too many more 100-point floggings, that's all.
No, exactly. 8 to 10 wins was what most of us predicted for Fremantle this year, so that's okay.
Yep.
It's the nature of some of the losses that is concerning. That's what they need to get out of their system next year. Joe, I ask, of all the trade rumours you hear with other clubs being linked to players, why do we never hear of the Eagles being linked to players? Why don't they ever go after big-name players? Joe names Josh Kelly as an example, but obviously he's talking about the Eagles generally. Should West Coast be a bigger player at the trade table?
Absolutely. I think everyone should be. I think you should do everything you can to get... And I'm sure they are. It's just probably they don't make a song and dance about it. I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I do think that West Coast has a policy of build through the draft first and then try and top off through the trade period. And you have to say, if you look at West Coast history over the years, it hasn't served them too badly.
Yeah, yeah. And if you look at Frio's recent policy of recruiting expat WA players back here, so there is that problem of getting players over to Western Australia as well.
There is. I think one of the reasons why West Coast does what it does is that West Coast believes that if it can do a 2 to 3 year rebuild, because of the size of the club and the club's financial clout, it won't hurt the club's ability to resource itself if they have to go down and bounce off the bottom and get a Nick Natanui or an Andrew Gaff at the top end of the draft. Fremantle has more concerns about that maybe a bad year would result in the club taking a financial hit.
Yep.
So therefore, they tend to trade a little bit more to try and keep themselves up the ladder a little bit. Not that it's worked in the last 2 years. Brett DeCampo, who's a big West Coast fan, says, boys, is it fair to say with the absence of Nick Nat and Lysette for the season, things aren't quite as bad as it seems, considering that the Eagles have been in 10 or 11 games where the margin's been under 10 points. If they'd have won 4 more of those games with Nick playing, it would have been a very different season. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with it more. I think he's spot on.
Yep.
And I think that, I guess I've turned my point of view around a little bit. Given we expect Nick Nat back for round one next year, Lysett, given his, I guess there's a lack of confidence in his body, I think Drew Petrie might get another year as well now. He certainly put his hand up and said he'd be available. I know we've got varying degrees of view on that, but absolutely, I think with Nick Nat in the side, I think we've acknowledged this before, they're a 3 to 4 goal better side. Certainly their midfield is.
I love the way Drew Petrie competes.
Yep.
Apparently no one in the club has a bad word to say about Drew Petrie.
Yep.
Apparently one of the best people you'll come across in footy.
Yep.
I just worry about a 35-year-old. I worry about your ability to sell that to the players when...
Doesn't have to play every week, though. He's insurance.
Yeah. But you're trading out, well, you're retiring Prittis. I think Wellingham's in trouble. I think Lacroix may be in trouble.
Yep.
I think Josh Hill is gone.
Yep.
There's all these players that have, you know, they've been pretty good servants of the club. Obviously, injury probably got Sammy Butler in the end. But it's hard to sell it to the players. Well, they have to go, but we've got this 35-year-old. Because we need a fourth ruckman, we'll keep him. And the other thing I worry about is, Drew Petrie had a 7 or 8 week spell this year because of the finger injury he got in round one. Now, if he doesn't have that spell and he plays every week, how's he going now, getting on a plane every second week?
Yeah, I prefer him to have a finger injury than a long-term soft tissue injury, though. And I think with all that experience walking out the door, it's something you can't buy, and I think that may well save him.
Yep.
You need that experience at the club, I think.
Well, I think given the person that Drew is, few people that know him would begrudge him the year. Personally, I have an antipathy towards relisting 35-year-olds.
Yep.
But Jamie, why don't Freo play Tabana Moore, and how do Freo fix their forward line woes without trading in another player?
Well, they can't. They have to trade in another player. But I agree on the Tabana count. I think he's been pretty good the last few weeks. And I would, he'll play this week, I assume. And I would play him, provided he gets through the preseason okay. I'd give him as much footy as I can. I'd certainly keep him. And I'd try and play him as much as I can. I like him.
Yep. So obviously the forward line target they'll go after is Mitch McGovern.
Yep.
And then it's just a matter of what price they're prepared to pay and whether they can get him for that. If we're talking $750,000 a year for 5 years, then what Adelaide would turn around and say, well, if you're going to pay that much for him, we want your first pick. Pick five, which is about what it would be at the moment, that's a very high price to pay for a guy who's been playing fifth forward for Adelaide.
Yeah, I think he's worth it. I'd part with that.
Big call. Yep. Very big call. Not saying you're wrong, but that is a very big call. Dave says, can you ask the Eagles to chase Don Pike to coach because we have gone backwards under Simpson? I think that's harsh.
Yeah, look, we say 2 years ago they were in a grand final. They weren't far off at heading into the finals last year. If not for Nick Nat's injury, they possibly would have had beaten the Dogs first up and gone somewhere. It's been a tough year this year. I think that's a bit harsh. I don't think they've gone backwards under Simpson. I think the list has turned a bit, and I think he needs to address that. But I don't think it's Adam Simpson's fault. And look, you know, Don Pike, great coach, probably the coach of the year.
He's done remarkably well, Don. I think Nat Nui and Lysette, the big outs for West Coast, that explains a reasonable amount of where they're at. I think the other thing that explains where they're at is while getting Sam Mitchell in looked good on paper, I suspect in practice it hasn't worked that well for them. It's left them very slow through the middle, and it's left them struggling to run out games.
I would have still recruited him, though. I just think it was worth the gamble, given where they were at. I think it was the last year with this list they could have challenged for a flag.
Yeah.
And he could well have been that missing piece. I don't blame them for recruiting him. Hasn't been as successful as they would have thought. I don't think it's been an abject disaster either, by the way.
No, well, they may not have finished any further up
had
they gone in a different direction. The main thing they need is midfield size and pace, quarters.
Yep.
So Daniel Venables, we think, will help that. He looks a good type, but he's obviously had injury concerns this year. They will either via trades or via the draft go after a big-bodied mid, I would suggest. How much of a turnover will West Coast have, asks Warwick Ferris. And do you think Maston, Schofield, Hill, Lacroix and Lysette are all tradable?
Well, I don't think they'll trade Lysette. No,
and I don't think any of the others have value.
Maston, no, I don't. Maybe Schofield, but I don't think any of the others have value, no. And there will be a big turnover of the list. Obviously, they haven't mentioned their Mitchell, Pritis, Sam Butler, who's retired, so there will be a big turnover of the list.
So of the ones Warwick lists, I think Hill's in trouble. I think Lacroix may be in trouble. Lysette, you're right.
Maston's in trouble.
Maston has a contract.
Yep.
So that will probably save him. There's a couple of others. Simon Tunbridge has had a dreadful run with injury. They've rehabbed him from a knee reconstruction. I think he will go as well. Warwick suggests 12 changes. I would say minimum 8. Maybe as many as 12. Yep. Jeremy Menzel, obviously not a Ross Lyon fan. When will the AFL charge Ross Lyon for bringing the game into disrepute for his rubbish game plan ruining the game?
Well, Jeremy's entitled to his opinion.
Yes, I think we'll leave that one at that. Obviously, Ross pursues a very defensive game plan, a lot of numbers around the ball. But that said, a coach's responsibility is to try and win games or get his team into winning a position to win games as quickly as possible.
I think, as we've said, though, we would like the skill factor to be addressed as well with Fremantle. Though.
Absolutely. I don't mind Fremantle pursuing a defensive game plan as long as they do it skillfully.
The moment is when they fall back to the defensive game plan and it's a black hole back there at the moment, that's when you get into trouble because there is no plan B there.
Well, quarters... there is no game plan in the world that works if you can't kick the ball to each other.
True.
One last one from Mike Costello. When are the Eagles going to listen and play the kids?
Well, you better ask them.
Well, they played Luke Partington.
Yep.
They've played Tom Cole, but then he found his way out of the team again. It's what you define as a kid. Because everyone looks at Marcus Bontempelli and says, well, he stepped in and played well in his first season. Chris Judd, you know, Matthew Pavlich. Why can't everyone be like that? The reality is that for most kids, a career trajectory involves maybe some football first year, maybe a little more football the second year, and then hopefully moving into a semi-regular position or a regular position in their third season.
We'll probably see more of that next year, but the fact is, I know a lot has to go their way, but they are still a chance of playing finals right now as we speak.
Yep.
And if you get there, you never know what can happen. So it hasn't been that bad a year given what they've been missing. I think they're close. As we've seen, we saw last week with GWS, they were close.
Well, I think
just couldn't close it.
It could have easily been a very different season for West Coast.
It could have been, yeah.
Okay, let's get on to tips.
Friday, and an emotional game. Hawthorn v Western Bulldogs at Etihad Stadium. Goodbye to Luke Hodge. Josh Gibson not playing, but we'll do a lap of honour. And look, two greats of the Bulldogs' history, Bob Murphy and Matthew Boyd. Hawks have won the 8 of the last 9 against the Dogs. The Dogs win, obviously, in last year's sudden death final. So a good one to win. We should acknowledge Tom Mitchell setting a new AFL record for possessions
most
in a season.
Yes.
Passing Lachie Neal. So good effort for him. I think there's too much. Dogs are still a mathematical chance. I think Hawthorn hasn't looked as polished or as interested the last couple of weeks. And I think the Dogs win this one.
I'm going to go with the Hawks.
Yep.
I think the Hawks will be disappointed with how they played against Carlton last week, I reckon.
They got sucked into for bringing it down to Carlton's level, I think, the way they've been playing this year, strangling the game, throwing one back, and I think 10 to 12 goals it was, which is,
What I saw of the Bulldogs had a lot on the line against Port Adelaide last week, and I didn't see enough from them in that game in Ballarat, the first game played on Mars. For me to have much faith in them. I think there's a lot missing out of their back half now. They're a bit of a skeleton of the team that won the flag last year. Obviously, Jake String's hamstring last week just further weakens them. And I think the Hawks in the back half of the season have been pretty good.
Yep. Saturday, Collingwood v Melbourne at the MCG. Two highest disposal teams in the comp, both average over 400. I'm picking Melbourne to win this. Way too much to lose. Grundy returns, so it'll be a good battle between him and Gawn. I'm picking Melbourne.
This is the one that West Coast fans will be most interested in, I think, because this is their realistic chance of being a realistic chance of playing in the finals. So they'll take a lot of interest in it. But as you say, Melbourne, a team that has let itself down in the big moments in the past, they're finding better ways to stand up more often at the moment. I think they'll win.
And speaking of standing up, Viney with a foot issue, but I think he'll get himself up this week. They have to win. And good to see Jesse Hogan kick 6 last week too. Well done. Brisbane v North Melbourne at the Gabba. Brad Scott's been at pains to point out that we are not tanking. Well, we'll find out this week because whoever loses finishes last.
They wouldn't have to tank to lose to Brisbane.
Brisbane, I think, has had an impressive year if you look at the competitiveness.
Yeah.
Forget about where they are on the ladder and wins. I think they're going in the right direction and they're at home. I'm picking Brisbane to win it.
I guess one argument you could argue for North Melbourne tanking is that if they had the first pick in the draft quarters and therefore the first pick in the pre-season draft, it would be a good way to lever any trade deal for Josh Kelly.
Of course it would. For any North Melbourne romantics out there, win or lose, it's their worst season since 1972.
Thank you very much.
So should they? Let's look what happened after 72. So there's some nice medicine there for Kangaroo supporters. It was a very good era after 1972. For them.
I like what I see from Brisbane. I'm going to tip them to win at home.
Sydney v Carlton at the SCG. Good win by Carlton last week. First win over Hawthorn in 12 years. Sydney 13-2 since round 6, of course, when Carlton beat them. A bit of a shock result. Good luck, Carlton, this week.
Yes, the SCG is a little bit different to the MCG, and this is a little bit different Sydney team to the one they confronted that day.
Yeah, so Sydney.
Sydney for me.
Geelong v GWS at Cadinia. Hawkins back for Geelong. We've spoken about this already. GWS zip from two down there, but I'm picking GWS. I think they'll win. They'll win the right to host the final in week one.
Yeah, I'm going to go with GWS. I still have great respect for their talent. It may be that an opponent like Geelong at Geelong's home ground might be the thing that gets them focused and gets their mind on the job and playing footy to their ability and not to their own amusement.
If they lose, they'll be there 2 weeks in a row. What a great way for Stevie J to sort of see the back end of his career too.
So, yeah, they won't want to go there 2 weeks in a row. No, GWS.
Get that. It'll be interesting to see how he's received this week too. Port Adelaide v Gold Coast at Adelaide Oval. 7 from 8 against the Suns. Port, I guess, Port should win this one pretty comfortably. Dean Solomon saying all the right things. He's got them being a bit more competitive. They're tackling more. Stephen May v Charlie Dixon will be the key matchup here, but I think Port pretty easily.
Yeah, I think Port. Obviously, Port still has a great chance to play in the top four as well, to finish in the top four. Yep. So they will not only want to win, they'll want to win big.
Now, how much does Freo hate West Coast? You know where I'm going?
Well, obviously, they need to beat Essendon.
Well, also, just let Joe Danaher go nuts and kick 20 goals and win the Coleman.
No, I don't think they want to do that. I think they've lost a lot of face over the last fortnight. I think Fremantle will want to be pretty competitive in this game. Whether they have the tools and the resources left to be competitive is the big question mark, but I think Fremantle will be playing pretty hard.
And remarkably, the last time Essendon Freo have played in Melbourne since 2010.
That is remarkable.
It is, isn't it? So a long time between drinks there. I think Essendon wins that. And
Comfortably.
And well done, too, after a pretty horrible couple of years playing finals. I think we should acknowledge what a great effort it's been.
Yeah, absolutely. This is what Essendon needed to do.
AFL will be absolutely delighted.
The rebirth of a football club.
Yep.
This year with the Bombers. Well done. They've got clear air in front of them. A finals appearance was going to be probably the pass mark. And they look like they'll achieve that now.
Speaking of rebirths, Richmond v St Kilda at the G. Must win for Richmond, trying to get into that top four. Nick Riewoldt's farewell will be a lot of tears there. There were a lot of tears spilled last week with his farewell to Etihad. Wasn't that great to watch too? But that'll be there again this week. And really interesting, Dusty playing against probably one of the two teams he'll be playing for next year.
And don't forget, Quarters, that the last time these two played, St Kilda came out
there was a,
and produced that amazing first half.
They kicked a goal to half-time, was it?
Richmond, yeah. And that all convinced us that St Kilda had arrived, and yet here we are coming into round 23 and they're in 10th position and yep. they're a
still
significant
a
amount.
Still a mathematical chance, the Saints.
Yes, that's all it is.
Yep, so I think Richmond, way too much to lose. They won't be making the same mistake again.
And MCG as opposed to
yes,
Etihad,
that's right,
so that
yep.
will work in Richmond's favour.
Finally, West Coast v Adelaide here. West Coast first for inside 50s, strangely. Adelaide 13th. I think Adelaide win this one. I think there's we spoke about them needing to drop a game. It's good. I think it's good for teams to drop a game about 6 weeks out. They dropped it last week. Should have won the game. I mean, they had a whole lot more inside 50s and had the rub of the green free kicks. A couple didn't go their way late, but I think Adelaide would be kicking themselves about last week, but no real harm done. They're still 2 points clear. Win this on top. They're going to finish top two and get a home final anyway, but
yep.
I think they want to win this, and I think they will.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to go into the finals off two losses.
No.
So the fact that...
two losses and a bye, so yeah. You've got a lot of time to think about it.
So I think they'll want to win. Their form graph says they'll win. West Coast compete strongly at home, they usually do, but they're going to have to be a fair way out in front of Adelaide because Adelaide will be coming hard at the end and West Coast aren't that great in fourth quarters. I think Adelaide wins and knocks West Coast out.
And just finally, let's acknowledge Pritis, Mitchell and also Sam Butler, who will be doing a lap of honour.
Yep.
Great careers. And let's acknowledge Subi. There will be the Waffle Grand Final there, which will be a very emotional day, I think, for WA people. But I think this is the last AFL game played at the venue. Give me three favourite moments from Subi. Subi.
Well, I saw my team, my Waffle team, South Fremantle, win a flag there in 1980, standing on the bank, just near the scoreboard, in the southeastern forward pocket, with Stephen Michael, Maurice Rioli, Noel Carter all starring. That was a great moment. I didn't actually go to any of our winning State of Origin games. So I went in 1985 when we lost. So I can't claim one of those, although I enjoyed watching them on TV. I was at West Coast's elimination final win over Hawthorn in 92, which I still regard as pretty much the best game of footy I've seen. So that's a favourite memory. And the other one would have to be the 2006 Derby when Paul Hazelby kicked the goal to win for Fremantle with about 40 seconds left. That is the best Derby I've seen. So that would be the three I would remember. Yourself?
For me, being a Melbourne boy, I worked in Geelong for 8 years, for 4 years. I lived there for 8 years. Came across with the Geelong Advertiser and covered my first game against the Eagles in 87.
Yep.
Hadn't been to Perth. And so that, for me, just the romance and coming for the first time and having a look at the beautiful weather and seeing Subi for the first time, that sticks in my memory.
The grass banks?
Absolutely. As does the first Derby, which was pointed out to me today that it was Frio's first game at Subi.
Yeah.
Because they'd played their prior games at the Wacker.
They didn't start and finish well, did they?
No, they didn't, unfortunately. So there was the Derby as well, the build-up, and I felt like I was a part of history in WA for the first time in that build-up. And for me, the one that really stands out, which is a very sad moment, was Fitzroy's last game.
Yes,
in,
good
1996,
point.
Round 22. With the WA Opera singer singing Auld Lang Syne as Fitzroy players walked out for the last time. And I'll admit, I had a tear in my eye as they left. I don't think it was necessarily the wrong thing at the time, but I just didn't like it, didn't sit well, and I was very sad about it. For me, that I'll never forget that day.
It wasn't the wrong thing at the time because the AFL is an elite competition.
Yep.
and elite was beyond Fitzroy by that stage. But you have to say that once you've rationalised one, you're adopting double standards if you don't rationalise others.
Yep.
that are probably approaching the same boat. So they've sought to help teams out that have been approaching the sort of predicament that Fitzroy found themselves in.
Yeah, just the wrong time. Found themselves at the wrong era, wrong time, really, they did. But
yeah.
I'll also say I felt that Freo did a really good job that day.
They did. Very respectful.
Very, very much so. So they would be my three. And how'd you go last week?
Not as well, but okay.
Yeah,
okay,
I'm about the same.
Yeah.
Well, good luck this week, final round.
Yes, good luck to all you tippers out there. Don't forget to follow your footy. We'll have the full preview in the pre-game in the West Australian on Friday morning. Of course, you can follow the Friday night match, the big Friday night match in the Weekend West on Saturday. The Sunday Times will have full previews of the last match at Domain Stadium. They'll have a preview of Fremantle's game against Essendon.
And all the mathematics about
all
what it's going to take.
All the mathematics, yes, what West Coast has to do to get into the eight. And then, of course, the full wrap of the round in the game lift out in the West Australian on Monday. Up-to-the-minute coverage on perthnow.com.au and in onthewest.com.au. And Quarters and I will be back with the wash-up from the weekend next Monday. Thank you.
The Game AFL podcast is brought to you by the West Australian and the Sunday Times, where the footy never stops. Watch the best videos and stay on the ball with breaking news and expert analysis at thewest.com.au and perthnow.com.au. This has been The Game.